Welcome to Dinosaur George Kids, a show for anyone who loves dinosaurs. Dinosaur George has studied paleontology for over 50 years and has performed live to over 4 million students across the world. So sit back and enjoy today's show. Now, here's Dinosaur George.
Hey there, future paleontologists. I'm Dinosaur George. Great to be with you once again. This is podcast number 102. Or considering how I said 101th on the last one, this would be podcast number 102. This podcast has now been downloaded 1,152,144 times. That's such a crazy number. It's just mind-blowing. We're heard in 182 countries around the world and in 16,342 cities. And the reason why this podcast is popular is because people like you share your love of dinosaurs with your friends and family. And it is, that's how word spreads. And I just want you to know how much I appreciate you doing that. I have got a ton of personal shout outs. Now, let me tell you what a personal shout out is. In my travels, I have a traveling museum. We travel all over and I meet people there. But then I also have a store and a museum in San Antonio, Texas, where so many of you come there. Now, unfortunately, because I'm on the road so much, I can't always be there to meet you in person. But what I love about my staff, that's the people that work there, what they do is if you come in and you tell them you're coming there and you wanted to say hi to me, they'll contact me. And if I'm able, they will FaceTime, set up a FaceTime where I'll get an opportunity to talk to you directly through FaceTime. I can't always do that, though, because sometimes I'm driving or I might be at an event and I'm not able to even answer the phone. But I want you to know that they definitely try to get in touch with me. So these are the folks that I've either met or who came into the store and I was able to greet through FaceTime. Let's start with Arlo Raptor. They came from Colorado Springs. Now, I did get to FaceTime. I was born in Colorado Springs, so that makes us family. Woohoo! But they and their family got to come by the museum and the store, and I hope you guys liked it. And I enjoyed talking to you through FaceTime. Then from Georgetown, Bronson, who was at the store, and Bronson got a membership, the Patreon Club membership, for his birthday. So that is so cool. Happy birthday to you. And that's a cool gift. I appreciate that very much. Andrew and Naomi from San Jose, California. I was able to FaceTime with them. They had come in, and that's San Jose, California. It's a long way from Texas. That's a long drive. Ronan and Torin. And by the way, Ronan's Patreon name is Pachyrhinoronosaurus. When you become a club member, you're able to give yourself a nickname, and these nicknames are just the best part of it. I was able to chat through FaceTime. He was there with mom and dad, they were both there with mom and dad. So thank you guys for coming. I hope you enjoyed your visit into the museum. Let's see. My podcast listener, Samuel, and his dad, Isaac, were from Minnesota, and they came to the store. And I wasn't able to FaceTime with them. I don't think I was. I see so many people, I can't keep track of it. But I know, I certainly appreciate you, Samuel. And Dad, thank you for bringing Samuel into the museum. I hope you guys enjoyed it while you were there. Now, Ernest and Agnes were both at the store. Now, I got a chance to see them. That was so cool. Lauren visited the museum, again, from Colorado Springs. That is so cool. I was able to FaceTime Lauren. So everybody's from Colorado Springs. That is so cool. Jack Raptor came to the museum. What a great name, Jack Raptor. Violet and Noah. Now, I just saw them yesterday. They're Patreon Club members. I was at the store in the museum yesterday. I don't even know what today's date is. What is today's date? I can't even keep track of any of this stuff. Today is April the 21st, so that would have been Saturday, April 20th. I just saw these guys. Jackson and River were with Mom at Trader's Village. Rock and Roar Ben and Spino Nico were at Trader's Village, and their mom, whose name is Fine. Because I said, I'm going to give you guys a shout out. And their dad looked at their mom and said, "Do you want a shout out?" And she said, "I'm fine." Okay, they named you Fine? Their mom's name is Fine? How did that happen? Here's what I think happened. Here's why I think she said, "I'm fine." Wait, was that her name or was she just saying, "I'm okay, I don't need a shout out"? No, I like my story way better. Okay, so here's what happened. When she was born, her dad said, "I think we should name her Elizabeth." And her mom said, "No, I really like the name Cynthia." And the dad said, "Yeah, but Elizabeth is such a great name." And her mom said, "No, Cynthia is way better than that. I like it way better than Elizabeth." And so the doctors walked in and they said, "What did you decide to name your daughter?" And her dad said, "We agree that it should be Elizabeth." And her mom said, "Fine." So the doctor wrote down, "Fine." And now that's her name. So Rock and Roar Ben's mom is named Spine. Fine. Spine. Fine. It was great seeing you guys. Javier and his brother came in with their mom at the store and Isabel, my beloved Isabel. Now, Isabel has been a Patreon club member from the start and she's such a good kid. And her parents and grandparents are such good friends. And it was so good seeing Isabel again. And she came in, as always, arguing with me about everything. I'm always right. She's always wrong. When are you going to learn, child? That's the way it goes. Charlie and Alice came from Austin, which was nice seeing you guys. And thank you, Dad, for driving them all the way down from Austin. And then Parkasaurus Rex had a birthday. Now, he lives in Colorado. And his aunt and uncle came in. I guess aunt and uncle. Yeah, I'm almost certain. And so anyway, I wanted to wish him a happy birthday. So that's all my personal shout outs. Now, a couple of announcements to make. The Dinosaur of the Month. As Patreon Club members, T-Rex members, you get to vote on who you want to be the Dinosaur of the Month. And they voted for April for it to be Dilophosaurus. So during the Dinosaur of the Month, we take an additional 10% off of all the merchandise in our gift shop that is related to Dilophosaurus. So all Dilophosaurus toys, that kind of stuff. Now, I know we covered Dilophosaurus in episode 15, but that was 3 years ago. So this is an update to that. Don't forget that if you ever visit San Antonio, you can come to our museum and gift shop. We're located in Traders Village in San Antonio, Texas. Go to our website, dinosaurgeorge.com, and you can see the Visit Our Museum page. And it will give you all the details. We're open every Saturday and Sunday from 10 to 5. And if you get a chance, give us a 5-star review on Google if you can, because that really helps us quite a bit. All right. One of the other benefits of being a T-Rex member of the Patreon Club is you get a birthday shout out during the month of your birthday. So let's go into those. First, Gunner Raptor, age 9, or turned 9 on March the 3rd. Now, we had missed Gunner Raptors, and that's why we added it into April, because I missed it. Oil Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor turned 6 on April the 2nd. Excellent. Ivysaurus turned 6 on April the 2nd as well. Marciapteryx turned 7 on April the 5th. Blakosuchus turned 9 on April the 8th. Magisaurus Rex turns 5 on April the 9th. Dilophosaurus Lucy turned 7 on April the 10th. Hey, how cool is that, Dilophosaurus Lucy, that in your name? That's the Dinosaur of the Month. Arthur Ceratops turned 3 April the 11th. Maxosaurus turned 8 April the 13th. Lexisatakosaurus turned 5 on April 14th. Eli Tyrannosaurin turned 7 on April the 14th. Rhinoceratops turned 12 on April the 15th. Vivisaurus Rex turned 9 April the 21st. Pizza Pizza Jurassic Jude turned 6 on April 27th. That's a kid who is hungry and really likes pizza, because that's the nickname he gave himself, Pizza Pizza Jurassic Jude. Ezra Raptor turned 10 on April the 23rd, or turns 10 on April 23rd. Kale's Raptor, I'm sorry, I can't read these. Kale's Raptor turns 8 on April the 25th. Hey, what did I say today's date was? Today's date was the 21st. Hey, let me back up a little there. Where'd that go? Vivisaurus Rex, happy birthday. Today's your birthday. Everybody else's, yours is coming up. Hugosaurus Rex turns 5 on April 27th. Parkasaurus Rex turns 6 on April the 28th. And Carcara Rosisaurus turns 10 on April the 28th as well. So, my friends, that is all the shout outs and all the cool stuff. Now, let's talk about our feature creature.
It's time for our feature creature segment. If you would like to suggest a creature, go to the Dinosaur George Kids podcast page at dinosaurgeorge.com or post your suggestion on the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group page. Now, here is your feature creature.
All right, our feature creature is Dilophosaurus. Now, the word Dilophosaurus means two crested lizards. A crest is something that you find on the skull of an animal. If it's on the skull, it's a crest. Now, the difference is with ceratopsians, we don't call that a crest because that's really on the back of the skull. What we call that a shield or a frill. A crest is something that's found on the head and usually is pointing up. Now, sometimes you hear people talk about Parasaurolophus having a crest, that long tube. Well, that's because it starts on top of the head. Yes, it goes beyond, but it starts on top of the head. Lambiosaurus, Corythosaurus, they have crests because those are attached to the skull itself, not the back of the head. So it's called two crested lizards because it's got those two crests, those two thin layers of bone on the top of the skull. Nobody knows for certain what they're for, but they're not weapons. You know, sometimes when we look at animals and we see something that maybe looks kind of sharp, like maybe it could use it to slice it. It can't do that because they're very thin and very breakable. Now, those crests were probably covered in keratin, which is what your fingernails are made of. That would have given them some stability, but they're still, in my opinion, they were very breakable. And so what purpose did they serve? Well, there's a couple of different hypotheses. That is a guess. There's two kinds of guesses in science. There's a guess, which you're not using a lot of facts to help you come up with your guess. Or then there is a hypothesis. And that means that you're looking at the evidence and you're making an educated guess. So, for instance, I might say, I guess a giraffe is 12 feet tall. Or I could say, based on the measurements of all the giraffes that are in captivity around the world, they find that their average size is 33 feet. I just made those numbers up, but I'm using it as an example. See, my first one was a guess. I just guessed at a number. But the other is based on science, based on measurements, on facts. And so there's a lot of hypothesis about the frill of the on the skulls, and some believe that they would have been used as a method to maybe cool the blood because they lived in a hot environment. And so in order to keep the blood cool, maybe those fins acted like the fins on an air conditioner where the air is cooled because of them. That's one theory. That's one hypothesis. Another is that they enhanced the sense of smell, that for somehow it gave more area for the sense of smell. And then a third is that they're just used as a way to communicate. Color is a communication tool in the animal kingdom. Color is used as a way to say, look at me or stay away from me. Colors are very important. Look at a coral snake. It's saying, look at my bright colors. Don't pick me up. I'm not good to pick up because I have bright colors. Look at poison arrow frogs. Bright blue, bright yellow, bright red. Those are colors that say, don't touch me. I'm not. Look at a red wasp. It's saying, don't come around me. My colors are telling you I'm dangerous. So perhaps the colors were bright. Maybe on the males, the colors were very bright. That would signal that, hey, other males, don't come into my territory. I don't want you around. Or maybe they were to say to a female, hello there. Would you like to come over to my house? We're having a barbecue on Thursday. And wait, a barbecue? Okay, forget that part. So there's a number of theories of what those crests were for, but I do know this based on my observation of them, they're very thin and therefore they're not very strong. So they're not being used as weapons. They're being used as something else. This dinosaur is fairly well known. Three skeletons were discovered back in the 1940s in North Arizona. So this is an interesting dinosaur. And then they found, they collected them in 1942. They discovered them in 1940, but it took them 2 years to finally excavate them out of the ground. Joeysaurus Rex and Brachiotheath asked, what family is Dilophosaurus part of? Well, we put dinosaurs into groups. We put all animals into groups. And you start with a big group, and then you work down to the smaller groups. So Dilophosaurus starts off in the family of dinosaurs. And then from there goes into the family of carnivores or theropods, the meat eaters. And from there, they move down into smaller and smaller groups until I believe Dilophosaurus ultimately ends up in its own family group. I don't know if Dilophosaurus fits in with the ceratosaurs. This is a good question. Dilophosaurus has four fingers, which makes it very unique. It's got that hooked beak on the end that that some ceratosaurs have. I'm going to guess here. And here's a good project for all of you. If all of you can figure it out. Now, this podcast will be streamed or will be uploaded to YouTube. So if you're watching it on YouTube, leave a comment below that what you believe the family it belongs to. Or for those of you listening to the podcast, go to the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group page and post your findings. You do some research and you tell me, what family does Dilophosaurus belong to? And maybe we can find out if he is in the ceratosaur family. And there I go again saying he. That's just a habit. Whenever I talk about dinosaurs, I always say he or him. And, you know, there's female Dilophosaurus too, George. Dinosaur George. Don't you know that? Yes, I do. I'm very sorry about that. I always say that. So when I say him or he, it's just a habit. I've been saying it for a very long time. Okay, so how big was this thing? Well, it was 7 meters long. That's 23 feet. And it weighed about 400 kilograms. That's 880 pounds. So you're talking about what we would consider to be a medium-sized carnivore. But they're very lightly built. There's words we use like gracile and slender when we describe animals. And both of those represent a light animal. Like a cheetah is slender. A lion is a brute. So this dinosaur does not appear to be made for combat. To me, it does not appear to be an animal that is hunting big game. It's focusing, in my opinion, on things that are smaller than itself. Now, it's still got long arms and, like I said, still has four fingers. And that's very rare in the dinosaur world with theropods because most theropods have three and then some have two. But four means they're very ancient, meaning this dinosaur was around in the Jurassic and probably dates back to the early Jurassic. Maybe even they were around in the late Triassic when there were four-fingered carnivores. So Ceratosaurus, and that's the other reason why I think Dilophosaurus fits in with the Ceratosaur family, because Ceratosaurus have four fingers as well. So it's very slightly built. Now, what's really unusual about this thing is the skull, because that's the thing that's the most amazing. The skull, immediately when you look at it, you see these big plates kind of on its head, these big plates on the skull. And again, we call them crests. So that's the most recognizable feature. If you remove those, it has the same basic skull design as most other theropods. But there is something different about it. And that is when you look at the end of its nose, there is a hook, or we call it a crook, where it's angled differently. We see this in Spinosaurus. We see this in crocodiles. We see that crook at the end. We find that to be something with aquatic hunting, catching fish. Apparently, that hook works very, very well with catching and holding fish. The other thing about its skull that stands out is that the largest teeth are kind of right behind that crook or that hook. That's where the largest teeth are. Same with Spinosaurus. Now, you might say, well, then shouldn't this fit in with the Spinosaurus family? Well, when we put things into family groups, there's more than just a couple of features that make something fit into the group, right? There's more than that. Let's say we find a skeleton of a cat and the skeleton of a dog. Well, their skeletons have a lot of similarities, right? They both have sharp teeth. They both have a tail. And so you might think, okay, so these two animals fit in the same family. But when you look closer, you go, but wait a minute. This cat's foot is different. The claws are different. Its body shape is a little different. Its neck is a little longer. And then you realize, okay, no, these two animals don't fit in the same family group. They're different animals. Same thing with Dilophosaurus and Spinosaurus. Yeah, it's got that weird looking skull. And yeah, you could even say, well, Spinosaurus has a big sail on its back and Dilophosaurus has a sail, two sails on its skull. But that doesn't make them close enough a relative to fit into the Spinosaurus family. So, but anyway, getting back to that skull, those teeth are not very thick at all. In fact, they're very thin, which means they could be very breakable. And by being thin means that they're not hunting big game. That's why I say I believe these animals may have been more fish eaters. Maybe they're hanging around the shore of the ocean. You see, in every environment has plants, water, oxygen, plant eaters, and meat eaters. They all have them. Every environment has those things. So, well, I mean, every livable environment has those things. And so when there are meat eaters in an environment, think of an environment as a room. Okay, pretend there's four walls and you're living in this room. And there's other meat eaters with you. You can do one of two things. You can fight with those others for the same food, and the chances are you get hurt or you die. Or you can find food that the other ones don't want, and therefore you don't have to fight for it. So it's possible that Dilophosaurus is focusing on water as its means of finding food and leaving the big game hunting to Ceratosaurus or even Allosaurus if they lived all the way up to the late Jurassic. So it's very possible that that weird looking mouth and weird looking skull are made for hunting. The other thing about it I want you to know is that its nostrils are farther back on the skull. The opening to the nostril is farther back, which would mean that this animal might have been able to stand in the water with its face partly in the water with its mouth open, waiting for something to swim by so it could snatch it. Maybe at night. Maybe they're night hunters and fish don't realize that its mouth is open. And when something swims by, it could sense it and snap its mouth shut. With its nostrils being further up on its head, it can still breathe while its face is partially underwater. Certainly a possibility, but whatever the case, it's an amazing animal. And they have serrated teeth. Now, serrated teeth are unusual for this reason. A serration on the side of the tooth is what slices the meat. It what cuts the meat. Spinosaurus does not have serrated teeth because he doesn't want to slice it. He wants its teeth to stab. Because if you're eating fish and you bite down and you bite the fish in half, half of the fish is going to fall out of your mouth and float away and you lose it. You don't want to do that. So why then would Dilophosaurus's teeth be made for slicing meat if it's catching fish? That's a mystery. I don't know the answer to it. I don't know. But I do know that this animal would have been a pretty dangerous animal to come in contact with. It would have been a very dangerous animal to come in contact with because it's got relatively long arms with four functioning claws. Its feet had claws on it, and it's got that mouthful of those teeth. So whatever it is doing in its environment, it's doing it very well because that dinosaur had been around for a very long time because it has those four fingers. That's a very archaic feature, and archaic means very old. Archaic means very old. So, Dilophosaurus is cool, but now if you've ever watched the movie Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, in that movie, Dilophosaurus had this frill that opened up around its neck. And that is completely made up. There is no evidence whatsoever, absolutely no evidence at all, that that animal had that. When they made the movie, they decided to add that to make it look more dangerous. I was a little upset that they did, because there's no evidence to support even a hint of that. But you have to tell yourself, when you're watching a movie, a pretend movie or a pretend subject, you have to understand that, well, okay, they can do whatever they want to do. But the only reason why I'm bringing it up is, if you've ever watched movies about, or you ever watched the Jurassic Park movie and you saw Dilophosaurus, I don't want you to think that really had that frill. It was totally made up for the movie, totally made up. And it also didn't spit that black goo out. There's no evidence of that either. You don't need to spit when you're as big as Dilophosaurus. So he doesn't walk up and, why'd you spit on me? I don't know. I saw a movie. I think I'm supposed to do that, man. Okay, first of all, how come a Dilophosaurus is speaking English? But more importantly, how did you get into the theater? Did you buy a ticket? I mean, when you got there, you're like, one, please. And they're like, isn't that a Dilophosaurus? Okay, I don't know how I get off on these stories. Okay, Noah, who is my assistant, asked a question, said, was Dilophosaurus a predator of large prey, or was he a scavenger and small prey hunter? I know some studies have suggested that Dilopho could hunt large animals due to his relatively weak bite force. What do you think? Okay, let me explain what I mean, because I butchered that whole question. The bite force, that means how hard you can bite down. The bite force of an animal is determined by the shape and size of its jaws and the muscles used to open and close them. So a crocodile has a strong bite force. A great white shark has a strong bite force. Tyrannosaurus Rex did. Not only do their jaws have the strength to bite incredibly hard, but their teeth are made to withstand the bite force. When you look at Dilophosaurus, its teeth are very thin. If it had incredibly strong jaws, but had those thin teeth, it would break off every tooth in its mouth. So what Noah is asking is, because scientists can estimate the bite force of Dilophosaurus, it appears to be very weak. Would that then mean that it's not hunting big game? I agree with that, Noah. I don't believe that it's hunting big game, not only because of the bite force and the tooth design, but its general body design of being a slender dinosaur just doesn't end well. You don't see a cheetah attack a wildebeest or a zebra. They won't, because that's too big for them to take on. They don't have the body strength. They don't have the power to take on those animals. Now, they will hunt the babies of those animals, but they're not hunting the adults, because that's not how they're made. A lion, on the other hand, man, it'll go after anything because it's got a powerful bite force and it's got the teeth that can handle that. So in the case of Dilophosaurus, Noah, I agree with you. I do not, because I know what you think about it. I agree with you that this is not a big game hunter. Now, Noah did mention something that I'd never give enough credibility for, and that is scavenging. Scavenging is an excellent way to get food without getting into a fight. So if you show up and a big predator has killed its prey and has eaten its fill, if that big predator isn't laying right next to it, you're going to sneak in and grab what you can get as well. And you don't have to have incredibly strong jaws to rip off a chunk and run away. So it probably did scavenge, which is, I never give enough focus on scavenging. Now, these animals lived in North America, and Cha-Cha Hurricane Ben said, was there grass with the dinosaurs? And if not, what covered the ground? Grass did not appear till late in the Cretaceous period. There wasn't grass. There were plants. There were ferns and horsetails and ginkgos and palms and conifers and all kinds of plants living back then. But there was no grass. So I would imagine if we could travel back to the Jurassic or even the early Cretaceous, we would have seen ferns, like the ferns that your parents may have in your house. They may have ferns hanging in baskets in your yard or in your house. So those Boston ferns would have been there. So I think the covering would have been that. Okay, let me see what else we got. Now, it was one of the earliest of the big predators. See, Coelophysis was pretty big for its time, but Dilophosaurus was one of the really large predators of its time. And what's really kind of cool about it is the state dinosaur of Connecticut. How crazy is that? Let's see. Joeysaurus Rex and Brachiohith said, were there any dinosaurs that had an opening frill like Dilophosaurus in Jurassic Park? There was not. There was not. There was no frilled dinosaurs that have been discovered yet. Now, dinosaurs are related to reptiles, right? They fit in the reptile family, and there are reptiles with a frill around their neck. So the possibility exists that there may have been a dinosaur with a frill. Wouldn't that be cool if you were the ones to discover that? All right, let me take a little quick break here. For those of you that would like to join the Patreon Club, this is for you.
Become a member of the Dinosaur George Patreon Club and join the fun. We offer different club levels, each with their own set of benefits. Private lessons, new discoveries, behind-the-scene access, and much more are all part of being a club member. Visit DinosaurGeorge.com and sign up today.
All right, let me jump over to the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group. Now, this is the cool thing about that. Number one, it's totally free. There is no fees whatsoever, and we monitor it. We try to make it a safe environment for kids. It's a great place where you can post short videos, you can post images of your toys, you can post images of your art. And when I say toys, even though it says Dinosaur George Kids, we have a lot of adults and young adults who also participate because they do some remarkable things. Some great photos and really amazing drawings. So let me jump over there real quick and see what's there. Lucas Spiney traced a shadow of his Indoraptor eating Dinosaur George. Okay, what kind of a drawing is that? Why would you want me eaten? What is with you kids always having me eaten by something? Why? Why, I ask you? I should not be eaten. I should be adored. So here's your project. If you would like to, draw a picture of me with a dinosaur sitting next to me, smiling, not eating me. I better not see me in the mouth of a T-Rex or being attacked by a shark or being stepped on by a Brachiosaurus. You rotten little kids, you better draw a beautiful picture of me with loving dinosaurs beside me, admiring me. I like that. I know I'm not going to get it, because I know what you people are going to do. But anyway, Luca's guardian said, we love your podcast and listen every day. That is so kind. Thank you. Since we recently found your work, we get to catch up from the very beginning. Thank you for being a safe place for kids to have fun and learn more about dinosaurs that we love and discover some new ones. Well, you know what? That is so kind of you. Thank you very much for that. I appreciate it very much. Okay. Jackiopteryx, right? Jackiopteryx is 7 years old, as is a T-Rex club member. Thank you. He would like Dinosaur George to talk more about Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor, including why he hates it when Dinosaur George sings Happy Birthday. Let me tell you all something about Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor. If you're new to this podcast, here's the deal. We had a raptor egg in our laboratory, and it began to crack. And I thought, like in the first Jurassic Park, I would help open the shell and let the baby out. Well, when I opened the shell, the little raptor inside was furious because he felt like I broke the door open to its house. And ever since then, that thing hates me. Now, it hides all over the studio. We never know where it is. We look everywhere and we never can find it. But if I sing Happy Birthday, that thing appears and attacks me every time. And I think it's because when I cracked open its egg, I started singing happy birthday to him. And that song infuriates that thing. It ruins every birthday song by running in and screaming cha-cha-cha in the middle of the birthday song. That's how it got its name, cha-cha-cha raptor. It is a horrible animal. There's nothing good about it. We've had it sitting in the studio pretending to be an employee. It showed up to our building wearing a UPS delivery cap. It came dressed as a pizza delivery driver, an Uber driver. It acted like the fire department one day, and they let it in. And it comes running into the studio and attacks me every single time I sing happy birthday. I will try to figure out how to do a show about Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor. And he suggested that I get somebody else to sing happy birthday and maybe he won't attack. I don't know. Maybe that's the right way to do it. But all I'm going to tell you is I'm staying away from that thing. Okay. So, again, I want you all to know that I read every post on the Dinosaur George Kids page. I look at your pictures. I watch your videos. I read them all. I don't have time to respond to them. A lot of times I'm sitting in a hotel because I travel with my traveling museum. And I'm sitting in a hotel. And the way I relax is I sit down and I read and I look at all those posts on the Dinosaur George Kids page. But I don't respond to a lot of them because if I do, I spend hours and hours and hours on the page and I have to get my sleep, right? So I want you to know that when you post something, if I don't respond to you, I don't want you to think that I'm not reading or looking at what you're posting. I am. I promise you I am. And I need to do a better job of at least just leaving a like or a smiling emoji or something to let you know. But that worries me that some of you post something and then you don't see that I say anything about it. You must wonder, well, did he even look at it? I do. I promise I do. So please understand that if you post a picture or a drawing or anything or a comment, I want you to know that I do look at every single one of them. But sometimes there's 100 or so. And if I start answering or commenting, the next thing I know, it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I have to wake up in 2 hours to go to work. And I just can't do that. So anyway, I want you to know that I really, truly do read everyone. All right, let's jump into the Ask Dinosaur George segment. Now, in this segment, you can ask questions, and there's a couple of ways to do it. Patreon Club members always get the priority. If they have questions, their questions are always answered at first. Second after that comes the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook questions. If you post a question there, those may be selected. And then the third way is you can just send us an email direct through our website. Go to dinosaurgeorge.com and there's a contact us button and you can submit one there as well. We get so many questions, we can't answer them all. So they're randomly selected, but they're selected in that order. T-Rex Club member, Raptor Club member, Triceratops Club member. Then it's Facebook and then direct contact. So we answer them in that way. And we randomly choose from all of those, okay? So let's jump into the Ask Dinosaur George segment.
Do you have any questions about dinosaurs? Just ask Dinosaur George. You can post your questions on the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook page or click on the Dinosaur George podcast page at dinosaurgeorge.com. Questions are chosen at random, and you can submit as many as you want. And now, here's Dinosaur George.
I'm laughing because some of these questions are just absolutely great. Okay, this first question comes from Vedraptor. He said, can Dilophosaurus swim? That's a great point. Dilophosaurus's tail. There are two kinds of tails with meat-eating dinosaurs, with theropods. One is the wiggly tail, like a crocodile's tail. The other is a stiff tail. Tyrannosaurus rex. Raptors have a stiff tail. They don't wiggle it like a crocodile tail. Now, that is because a wiggly tail isn't as good for balance when it's running. Raptors' tails are stiff, like a broomstick. They're stiff. They don't wiggle because when they're running at their top speed and they have to change direction, Their tail acts as a balance to keep them from falling down and wiping out. But Spinosaurus, Dilophosaurus, and Ceratosaurus have the wiggly tail. And that suggests that it would help them swim. And so, Dilophosaurus have a wiggly tail adds that much more evidence to the hypothesis that they were aquatic. Those are big words. What that means is there's a little more proof that what I think that it lives in the water is true. That's what all those fancy words just meant. It is credibility added to my hypothesis that is semi-aquatic. Fancy words. It means I think they lived in the water sometimes. Semi-aquatic means sometimes in the water. They're made for living on land, but I think they went into the water, and I think that tail. Also, VedRaptor said, you are 100% not El Stinko. Thank you. Then he called me El Stinko. Let me explain El Stinko to those of you that are new. El Stinko is the name of a superhero who uses his stinky underarms as a way to defeat dinosaurs. I've been accused of being El Stinko. I'm not. Now, it's true that I can use the stench from my underarms that's strong enough to stop a dinosaur. Yeah, that's true. And they'd say that El Stinko has blue eyes. Okay, yeah, so I've got blue eyes. Big whoop. And they say that El Stinko is 5'7" tall. I happen to be 5'7" tall, but big whoop. I am not El Stinko. No one knows the identity of El Stinko. Faster than the Flash, stronger than the Hulk, more luscious hair than Wonder Woman. I am not El Stinko. No one knows the identity of El Stinko. So stop calling me El Stinko. All right. This next question looks like from Colleen. Did Dilophosaurus use its little arms? Now, I want you to remember, when you look at a dinosaur, theropod dinosaur meat eaters, their arms always appear to be smaller than what they need. But that's because you're comparing them to these huge bodies. So, yeah, when you look at Allosaurus, you go, look how little its arms are compared to its body. But really, when you get up close, you go, those are big arms. It's just a big animal. Now, when you look at Tyrannosaurus Rex, you go, those are tiny. But you know what? Tyrannosaurus Rex's arms are about as long as an adult's arm. It's not tiny. We can use our arms. I don't know how they use theirs, but anyway. So with Dilophosaurus, yeah, compared to its body size, they're not that big, but they're very effective weapons to be able to grasp and hold. Now, their arms, their palms of their hand point towards their chest. So if you want to pretend to be a meat-eating dinosaur, you always have your palms of your hands facing your chest, and you walk with your arms out like this. They don't use their hands like this, like moving forward, like playing the piano. They don't scratch like scratch on a tree. Their arms are pointed to the side. They're made for grabbing and holding, which is an effective thing if you want to keep your prey from running away from you. The Dilophosaurus isn't going to scratch you up. It's going to hold you with those claws and use its teeth as a weapon. So they would have been used, in my opinion, as a way to grab and hold. The other one was, we read in a book that T-Rex may have hooted or hissed like a bird instead of a loud roar. Do you think that was true? We laugh every time we read it, thinking about a giant T-Rex hooting. We love you, Dinosaur George. Well, that's very kind of you guys. Yeah, there's a lot of questions about what sounds did dinosaurs make? Because the part of the body that produces sound is usually made of soft tissue, which means it decomposes when they die, which means there's not much left for scientists to know. So they have to decide. Some people theorize that Tyrannosaurus Rex may have chirped like a bird. Wouldn't it be crazy if it sounded like a rooster and you travel back in time? You've invented a time machine and you travel back in time and the sun is rising and you hear, and you go, wow, there's a rooster that woke me up. And then you look outside and you see a 6-ton Tyrannosaurus Rex sitting on a fence post going, What a visual picture that is. A Tyrannosaurus Rex balancing on a fence post, crowing in the morning to wake everybody up in the forest. Oh, that's great. Anybody wants a project? Draw a picture of a Tyrannosaurus Rex on a fence post at a farm crowing in the morning and post it on the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group page. All right. So, yeah, there's a lot of theories about what kind of noises could they have made, right? Birds evolved from meat-eating dinosaurs, and birds are very vocal and have a range of sounds they could make. And if you've ever heard a goose or a swan hiss, it's a terrifying noise. So maybe they made that. Some people theorize that because dinosaurs evolved from the family of crocodilians, that maybe they did that rumble. That in the movies, we make them make sound for entertainment value. Like in Jurassic Park, they combine the sound of an elephant, a train, and a variety of other things to make that gigantic roar. It was just for the movies, but nobody can say for certain what they sounded like. That was great. But yeah, that is funny. Or what if it hooted like an owl? Woo, woo, who are you? Because I'm about to eat you. Woo, woo. Okay, I got to stop with the bird effects. All right, Hugosaurus Rex said, "Hey, Dinosaur George, hope you're doing well. My birthday is coming up in 2 weeks, and I hope Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor sings happy birthday to me. And I'll feed him candy so that he doesn't bite you." That's actually a good idea. My question is, why in Jurassic Park does Dilophosaurus have a frill, and was that real? Okay, so I've covered that before. Hugosaurus Rex, that was not real. That was totally made up for the movie. They did it just for entertainment purposes. Just like I told you, they gave the T-Rex a giant roar. That was for entertainment. That wasn't science-based. That was entertainment-based. And there's a difference. There's science, and then there's entertainment. And sometimes both of them can come together to make really cool stuff. But other times they can make up some things to make the science part more fun. So, actually bringing in a dish of food might prevent me from being attacked when I sing happy birthday. That's actually a good idea. We're going to try that the next time. I think we're going to try that. We'll bring in a plate of hamburgers and see what happens. All right. Let's see. This is from Nodosaurus Rex. Do you think dinosaurs scratch their backs? And if they did, do you think it was like a dog and they use their back legs, or like a bear and use the bark of a tree? Thank you, Elstinko. We love your podcast. Whenever we're in the car, it's what we listen to. Well, that's great. So what a great... Did you just call me Elstinko? Did that kid just call me Elstinko? Listen, I told you people before, I'm not Elstinko. No one knows the identity of Elstinko. It's not me. I don't know. Maybe it is. It's not me. Stop calling me Elstinko. So, interesting question. How did they scratch their back? Well, animals scratch, right? All animals scratch themselves in some degree. Monkeys scratch each other. Thank you. You missed a spot. Tyrannosaurus Rex? It couldn't. It's like, I can't scratch my nose. Would somebody please scratch my nose? That was my T-Rex voice. How did that be? Ooh, ooh. Who's going to scratch my nose? I will. Why do you kids send me on these journeys in my head to start these stories? Okay. So, the use of a tree, absolutely, I think they would have. I think they would have rubbed against a tree. That brings up a good point, and that could be something called scent marking. Bears do it. Cats do it. That is, you leave your scent on a tree in your territory so that others that show up can smell you and know somebody lives here. It's a great way to stop a fight. You don't want to fight as a dinosaur. You, if you have to, you do, but you don't want to risk being injured. So what we may have seen was we may have seen predatory dinosaurs walking around either urinating at the bottom of the tree the way dogs do. Dogs do that. It's a way to say, hey, I was here. So dogs do that to, as a communication tool. That's why they always go in the same spot. Like if you ever walked your dog and he always wants to go to a certain tree or something and urinate, pee a little bit, he's leaving a message for the other dogs. Hey, I was here. And he can smell that other dogs are there too. I bet you dinosaurs probably did that. Predatory dinosaurs probably did that. But I think it would have been a scent marking, maybe scratching their necks on the side because maybe they had glands that made a smell. And so maybe they scent marked areas. So what we might think of them scratching themselves could actually be something leaving a scent mark. But if you got an itch, you got to scratch. But you know what I think would have helped them scratch? Pterosaurs. Little pterosaurs. I think that pterosaurs would have landed on dinosaurs and crawled all over them, picking off bugs, insects, ticks, things like that. So I think they kind of got a back scratch because pterosaurs may have been doing the scratching for them. They weren't scratching them. They were crawling all over them, picking off parasites, and that would have felt like a nice, good scratch in the back. That's a very interesting question. That's very good. Let's see. And here's this last one. This is from Giganotto Gibson, who said, how would dinosaurs act during an eclipse? What an interesting question. How would they have acted during an eclipse? I suspect that because their brains are not big like a mammal. When the eclipse happened recently here in Texas, we saw 100% eclipse. It was amazing. And how the world just got super dark all of a sudden. It was the craziest thing. So how did a lot of animals do? Well, do you know that a lot of birds stopped singing because in their brain, it was time for sleep? A lot of animals stopped moving around. Now, a lot of mammals were freaking out. Dogs were barking. They were trying to, something wasn't right. They recognized that. But then very shortly, the sun came back out again and everything was fine. I think that rather than be confused, I think they just simply would have thought, eh, it's nighttime. Everybody go to bed. And they just would have stopped doing everything. And then when the sun came back out, I think they would have been like, oh, it's daytime. Oh, I hope you kids have as much fun with this as I do, because I have an absolute blast doing these ridiculous things. All right, let's do some Who Would Wins and wrap up this podcast.
Who would win? What if two different prehistoric creatures fought? Who would win? T-Rex versus a giant wolf? Raptor versus terror bird? Spinosaurus versus Triceratops? You choose the animals, and Dinosaur George will size them up and pick a winner. Now, get ready. It's time to find out who would win.
All right, in order to submit a Who Would Win, you have to be a T-Rex member of the Patreon Club. If you want to join Patreon, go to our website, dinosaurgeorge.com. Go down halfway down the main page, and you will see a link to allow you to do that. So, this first one is from Hugosaurus Rex. Says, hey, Dinosaur George, hope you... Oh, wait, wrong page. Wrong. It's just from Rock and Roar Ben. Oh, nice. I just saw you. Hey, isn't your mom name Fine? Okay, back to this. Who would win? Dilophosaurus versus T-Rex versus Giganotosaurus versus Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor. Well, Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor is going to win because it cheats at everything. It doesn't play fair. What it's going to do is it's going to go out and buy a rope, and it's going to tie it around T-Rex's foot. And then he's going to run over and tie the other end of the rope to Giganotosaurus. And they're going to pull and trip and fall down, and he's going to claim he wins. But if it wasn't for that, Dilophosaurus is not going to have any power whatsoever against these two titans. It just would not survive. It could be faster, maybe, but poor Dilophosaurus goes away quick. That leaves T-Rex and Giganotosaurus. Cha-cha-cha. Raptor is out riding his bike or whatever he does all day long, or gets into trouble. I know he's doing something bad. So that leaves Rex and Giganoto. Remember earlier I was talking about bite force and how the tooth design, how your teeth determine your bite force and that kind of thing. When you look at the bite force of Tyrannosaurus, it is massively powerful, and it's got big round teeth, which means it can take tremendous power without breaking them. Giganotosaurus, on the other hand, has thin blade-like teeth. They're blade, very thin. Those are not the teeth of a cruncher. Those are the teeth of a slicer. So Giganoto could rip a big chunk of meat off of T-Rex with a bite, which would be devastating. But Tyrannosaurus Rex could crunch right through everything, making it absolutely in the fight with one massive bite to the hip or to the back, where he could crack right through everything. I think Tyrannosaurus Rex would actually win that. Okay, this is from Marcel. Who would win between a Dilophosaurus and a Quetzalcoatlus? And Dinosaur George, who we know you are a stink bomb maker. Okay, if I'm in this fight and I'm allowed to use my stink bombs, I win hands down. But let's look at your other ones, Dilophosaurus and Quetzalcoatlus. Quetzalcoatlus being considerably taller, when he's on the ground, is considerably taller than Dilophosaurus. And that long beak of Quetzalcoatlus means Dilophosaurus is not even going to come in close, because that beak is an absolute weapon. I would give the fight immediately to Quetzalcoatlus just based on its size. Okay, Spino Baron says Dilophosaurus versus Dinosaur George versus Cha-Cha-Cha versus Stiggy Moloch. Well, again, if you're taking away my weapons, I'm out. Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor has figured out how to start a motorcycle and it's off riding around the countryside on a dirt bike. So that leaves Dilophosaurus and Stiggy Moloch. Now, this is an interesting one, because now you're finding a little closer, closer battle size. I think Dilophosaurus. This is tough. Stiggy Moloch's going to use its skull as its weapon. I think Dilophosaurus would win. I honestly do. I think in this particular case, I think Dilophosaurus is going to be the one that's going to win. I think if it could get its claws on him, that's the end of that. Now, this is an interesting one as well. This is from Cha-Cha-Cha Runic Raptor, who says Dilophosaurus versus Cryolophosaurus versus Ceratosaurus. Wow. Ceratosaurus is the bigger of the three. Cryolophosaurus is maybe a little more advanced with its brain power, but I don't think that helps. Dilophosaurus and Cryolophosaurus pretty fairly evenly matched, maybe Cryolophosaurus having an advantage. But Ceratosaurus is a little more robust than these guys. I would give that fight to Ceratosaurus. I think it'd be an amazing fight, but I would give it to that. Now, this is from Therizino Bentley, who said male Dilophosaurus versus female Dilophosaurus. Wow. Wow. Here's what I believe. I believe the males fight more often than the females. And there's a difference between fighting a rival and catching and eating prey. Because usually when you're catching prey, it's trying to get away from you. But when you're fighting a rival, it's coming at you. You would learn over time how to defend yourself in a fight if you're in a fight more often. And I think males would be in a fight more often than females, because males would probably be fighting to be able to have a female girlfriend. So you got to fight for, right? So right away, the male has better skills. But if what we think of dinosaurs is true, it is that the females are more robust. So maybe they're a little heavier built, which would make them a little stronger fighter. Here's what I believe. If there was a baby being protected, there's no way the male stands a chance, because that female is going to risk everything to save the baby. You can't mess with mama dinosaur if baby's around. I don't think the male would even dare do it. But if it's just two of them fighting, I guess they would be fighting over food. I think the female would back down because she has more to risk, because fighting isn't what she does. So that would be my opinion. That's a very interesting question. Okay, Jude the Dino Dude asks, who would win between Dilophosaurus and Monolophosaurus? Hey, I like this. Now, Monolophosaurus, if you're not familiar with it, it's got sort of a crest on its head. It's more of a raised nasal passage on top of its head. Monolophosaurus is a little more robust, and the only advantage it has is its weight. And I would think Monolophosaurus would be the one that would be able to do that. That's a very interesting one. All right, Hanky Raptor wants to know who would win, Dilophosaurus versus Hanky Raptor with a sword. Hanky Raptor is fine, but very scrappy. Well, you can't stop a scrappy five-year-old with a sword. So that fight would immediately go to him. Dilophosaurus would look at him and be like, is that a little Hanky Raptor? And does it have a sword? Does anybody know where Cha-Cha-Cha Raptor is? Because I want to get on his motorcycle and get out of here. So yes, Hanky Raptor, you would definitely win that particular battle. All right, this is from Victoria. Oh, my beloved Victoria. Who would win? Three Dilophosaurus or a pack of Deinonychus, 10 of them. Wow. Victoria, this is a good one. Three Dilophosaurus versus a pack of 10 Deinonychus. Deinonychus has the speed. Deinonychus is also very lightly built because they're raptors. They're not heavily built. I would think that there's evidence to suggest that raptors were pack hunters. Deinonychus is an example, right? Where they're pack hunters. We find them in groups sometimes. So that would suggest that that's the life they lead. So they're probably better coordinated in their attack. But three Dilophosaurus. Now, they found three Dilophosauruses. Did they find them together? Were they all together? And I think they were. And if that's the case, then, wow. You know what? I think that they may have been. They may have been. I think they may have been. That's a great question. If they were together, then that suggests that they are hunting together and therefore would have some ability to kind of relate with each other as far as how they interact and what they do. I think the possibility exists that if they were found together, then they might be able to withstand an attack of raptors. I don't know. That's a great question. That's a very good question. All right. I have so many more I wish I could have answered, but I've run out of time for this particular podcast. If you would like to be a Patreon Club member, it certainly helps us a lot. Please become a Patreon Club member by going to our website, dinosaurgeorge.com, and look for the link. If you're ever in or around San Antonio, please come out to see us there. My store and museum, the museum has a lot of stuff in it. Spinosaurus skull, Giganotosaurus skull, Carnotaurus skull, Dilophosaurus skull, a skeleton of a 13-year-old T-Rex, Saurophaganax skull, also a lot of Ceratopsians, mammals. It's fun. It's a great place. So I hope you come out there. To everybody out there, be kind to each other. Be nice to people. If you see this on YouTube, please leave a like or thumbs up and please subscribe and follow us because that will help the channel as well. We're doing a lot of work on YouTube. So right now, Lexi is going in and bringing that up to speed. We plan to do a lot more on YouTube. But as always, this podcast will never change. It's always going to be free. And I hope you all enjoy it. Have a great day, everybody. And I will see you all soon.
Listening to Dinosaur George Kids. Join the Dinosaur George Kids Facebook group, become a member of our Patreon club, and check out our website store for cool fossils, rocks, and crystals. Visit dinosaurgeorge.com for details. Until next time, keep digging for knowledge.